In 1995, Tabitha Pollock was convicted of first-degree murder for the death of her child, even though she did not actually kill her young daughter. A jury ruled that she should have known that her boyfriend would kill the girl, even though in his confession to police, he said that Pollock had no idea of his abuse. The boyfriend is serving a life sentence for the murder. Pollock has served 7 years of a 36-year sentence. Last month, the Illinois Supreme Court overturned her conviction after the intervention of the Center for Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern University School of Law. Lawrence Marshall is the legal director and founder of the center.
Tabitha Pollock lived with this boyfriend together with the boyfriend's parents and some other people in the family. And a few times there were incidents in which she was told that her child or one of the other children had fallen down and suffered a minor injury, and she just assumed, like many parents do, that accidents happen. She was absolutely shocked and devastated beyond imagination when her 3-year-old daughter, Jamie Sue, was found dead in her bed one night, and when the police quickly told her that the child had been murdered, and then later told her that the boyfriend had confessed to having murdered the child. She was just beside herself with guilt of having brought this boyfriend into her children's life. And indeed, she then herself went back and said, were there any warning signs? Were there any hints? And she, in retrospect, said, boy, you know, I should have realized that when the child fell down the stairs, maybe that was suspect, even though no one else in the family suspected anything either.
I assume that the evidence of her distress was introduced at the time. Why did the prosecutor charge Tabitha Pollock with first-degree murder?
Well, it's a wonderful, wonderful question that has perplexed us greatly. And it's not an isolated case. The prosecutor in that county, a very small county in the western part of the state, actually went after 3 or 4 different mothers on this very unique, we think, unprecedented theory of liability for first-degree murder. And what makes it all the more remarkable is that the Illinois Appellate Court affirmed this conviction, as they have other women's conviction, by a 3-0 vote. And indeed, to make it even more remarkable, Ms. Pollock's lawyer then said to Ms. Pollock, you know what, I'm sorry, we lost, and we don't see any ground for appealing this case to the Illinois Supreme Court. And she was at that point destined to spend 36 years in prison. Mercifully, someone told her about our center, and she wrote a letter to us, to the Center on Wrongful Convictions, one of many, many thousands of letters that we get. And miraculously, one of our students, who had a good eye for injustice, opened the letter, looked at the letter, and said, this is incredible.
Now, you have legal students who work on these cases. Were you asking that her case be thrown out of court, in other words, overturned, or that there be a new trial?
Well, we were asking both, but the first problem we had is that her time for appealing had long lapsed. So we had to beg the Illinois Supreme Court to let us file a year late. And what we explained was, number one, that the theory upon which she was convicted and upon which the jury was instructed was a theory that the law does not allow. You can't convict someone of murder based on what they should have known. That's negligence. We also said that if the right theory was used, that the evidence didn't come close to supporting any conviction. The Illinois Supreme Court agreed and held not only was the instruction erroneous, which entitled her to a new trial, but even more, that once the right standard was used, it was clear that the prosecution utterly failed to show that she had actual knowledge that her boyfriend was an abuser, and therefore she was entitled to go free without possibility of retrial.
So she's been acquitted?
She has been acquitted by the Illinois Supreme Court, yes, ma'am.
What else happened to Tabitha Pollock, who's now 32 years old, as a result of her 7 years in incarceration?
Well, you know, I think she's gone through what can only be described of as hell. I mean, not only the hell of being incarcerated, be taken away from her family, but also the hell of being stigmatized not only as a murderer, but as someone who actually had an active role in murdering her very own child. And the terror of losing a child is obviously unimaginable. But try to combine that for one moment with the terror of then being accused and convicted by your state of having been an active, knowing, willing member in that allowing that murder to go forward. And it shocks me that she's been able to keep her sanity, frankly. during these 7 years.
What have the original prosecutors had to say about this case and what their rationale was?
They claim that under the law, and they're mistaken in this, a mother or a parent has unique duties, and that duty includes having to recognize that which a parent should recognize. And I frankly think there's a tremendous bit of misogyny involved here. We've yet to find a single case where a father has ever been prosecuted under the theory that he should have known what an abusive mother was doing. But there is this sense in which society often looks at mothers as having this absolute duty to protect, regardless of whether they were really capable or had the knowledge that would have been required to allow them to protect their child.
She is still in jail, although the Illinois Supreme Court has acquitted her. Why hasn't she been released yet?
The Illinois Supreme Court allows a losing party to file for reconsideration in any case, and that's pretty much a formality in 99% of the cases or more. That reconsideration is denied. But until it's denied officially, the status quo remains. We're hopeful that a decision denying that rehearing will issue as early as this coming Monday, in which case it will be a matter of days or weeks before she actually does get to go home and begin to rebuild her life and her family.
Tabitha Pollack had more than this one murdered child. What happened to her other children?
The other children, one of them has been adopted. Others are being raised by her mother. When Jane Raley, the lawyer who actually argued the case, called Tabitha's mom and told her what had happened, Tabitha's mom fell to the floor, crying and in delight, and then yelled over to the other room, to one of the other children, saying, "Preston, baby, Preston, your mom is coming home. Your mom is coming home." But the question of how she's going to be able to put her family back together and whether that will ever happen remains to be seen. And that's not unique to Tabitha Pollack. We've seen in a lot of the wrongful conviction cases that once the truth emerges, it's very often impossible to actually put lives back together, particularly where adoptions have been involved. And that's one of those irreversible tragedies in many of these cases.
Well, Lawrence Marshall, thank you very much.
It's my pleasure.
Lawrence Marshall is the legal director for the Center for Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern University School of Law.